Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Bruce Alpert, Dorothy Gundy, and Christopher Jones Cruz. First, here is Katie Weaver.
A new report about the attack on a U.S. diplomatic post in Benghazi, Libya, criticizes the United States government. The report says the Obama administration, as well as military and intelligence agencies, did not provide enough security to prevent the violence. The U.S. House of Representatives Select Committee on Benghazi released the 800-page report Tuesday. The September 11, 2012 terrorist attack killed four Americans, including U.S. Ambassador to Libya, Chris Stevens. The Benghazi attack has been officially investigated at least 10 times. The latest investigation lasted 2 years and cost $7 million. The chairman of the committee, Republican Representative Trey Gowdy, spoke to reporters about the report's findings. He said the investigation found a clear disconnect between the violence there and what officials thought was happening. Gowdy said American officials had real-time information, but yet somehow they thought the fighting had subsided. The report criticized the U.S. military for not sending resources to help protect diplomats in Benghazi. It said the military did not act, although President Obama and then Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta had ordered action. Gowdy said, "Nothing was en route to Libya at the time the last two Americans were killed, almost 8 hours after the attacks began." Military leaders have repeatedly said they did not have dependable intelligence on what was happening in Libya. They also said they did not have the resources to take action. The report blamed the Central Intelligence Agency for missing warning signs about the threat of violence in Libya. It also blamed the CIA for writing false intelligence reports after the attack. It criticized Obama administration officials for their early reaction to the attack. It also criticized them for how they later explained the events to the American people. Gowdy accused the State Department, the military, and the CIA of purposeful and, quote, shameful delay of the investigation. He said the agencies refused to provide or delayed providing all requested records to the committee. Hillary Clinton was serving as Secretary of State at the time of the attack. Last October, she answered questions before the Benghazi committee for 11 hours during a televised hearing. The report does not contain any new evidence against Clinton, who is now the presumptive 2016 Democratic presidential nominee. She has accused the Republican-led committee of acting for political reasons. On Tuesday, Clinton's campaign said the new report had, quote, not found anything to contradict the conclusions of the multiple earlier investigations. I'm Katie Weaver.
For Southeast Asia, the slowdown of China's economy may have a bigger economic impact than the British vote to leave the European Union. China's government reported the country's economy expanded at 6.7% in the first 3 months of this year. That is high compared to many countries. However, it is the lowest increase of its gross domestic product, or GDP, since early 2009. GDP is a measure of the monetary value of all goods and services produced in a country. Joseph Incalcaterra is an economist with the British bank HSBC. He has studied economic growth in Asia from 2000 to 2014. He says Chinese trade became more and more important in the area during those years. Yet he notes that China's slowing economy is, in his words, weighing down exports in the rest of the region. Estimates place the value of Southeast Asia's economies at $2.6 trillion. However, growth has slowed in 7 of the 10 members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Indonesia has been most affected, at least partly because it exports commodities such as raw materials to China. However, Southeast Asia's relatively young population and increasing wealth keep growth possible, although its exports to China are slowing. Earlier this year, the Asian Development Bank predicted economic growth of 4.5% for this year and 4.8% for 2017 for the area. Lee Hong-hip is with a Singapore-based research group, Asias Yosef Ishak Institute. He said he has not seen a lot of impact from China's economic slowdown in Vietnam. He said last year, Vietnam's exports to China grew by almost 15%. He said those exports, which are mainly raw materials and agricultural products, are less affected by a slowing economy. Southeast Asian countries such as the Philippines, Myanmar, Vietnam, and Laos have had changes in political leadership recently, but that has not stopped the flow of foreign investment to the area. Not only China, but India, Russia, and the United States have been increasing investment in the area. Trade between the U.S. and Vietnam increased to $45 billion in 2015. In addition to existing trade, U.S. President Barack Obama has pushed for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. The trade deal includes 12 Pacific nations. 4 of those countries, Brunei, Malaysia, Singapore, and Vietnam, are in Southeast Asia. Supporters say the deal counterbalances China's influence in the area's economy. Brian Eiler is deputy director of the Stimson Center's Southeast Asia program. He thinks U.S. investment in the area will continue to increase. He says, "We see the U.S. investing more in Southeast Asia, training more, restructuring its diplomatic architecture to better integrate with Southeast Asia." Eiler said India and Russia are seeking to do the same. He noted that China's slowdown leaves roads, ports, and other public systems underused. In his words, "No one wants to see that go to waste." I'm Dorothy Gundy.
President Barack Obama is again urging the United States Congress to act on immigration. Obama made his latest appeal after the nation's highest court failed to support his order protecting up to 5 million undocumented immigrants from deportation. The Supreme Court released that order last week. The court was split on the issue, with 4 members agreeing with the president and 4 others opposed. The ruling keeps in place a lower court decision that blocked the immigration order. The president called the Supreme Court ruling heartbreaking. "I have pushed to the limits of my executive order," he said. "We now have to have Congress act." But congressional action seems unlikely before Obama leaves office in January. "We know there isn't much left with this Congress," said Norm Ornstein, a specialist on U.S. politics at the American Enterprise Institute. Ornstein said the ruling is bad news for the president because he had hoped to make immigration reform an important part of his legacy. Texas and 25 other states had challenged Obama's 2015 executive order. It not only protected 5 million undocumented immigrants from being expelled, but let them have work permits. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton said the Supreme Court did the right thing. The court, he said, keeps in place what we have maintained from the very start. One person, even a president, cannot unilaterally change the law. The ruling last week is not expected to lead to mass deportations. Obama says the Department of Homeland Security would continue its long-established policy. That means moving slowly on deporting parents of children who are in the United States legally. But those adults would not be given work permits, making it harder for them to find employment. Businessman Donald Trump is likely to win the presidential nomination of the Republican Party. Trump has said he would deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. But Senator Marco Rubio, a Republican who lost to Trump in nominating events, said that will not happen, even if Trump is elected. "The American people wouldn't stand for it," Rubio, a Florida senator, told CBS television. Early in Obama's second term, the U.S. Senate approved a reform in immigration policy that had the president's support. But the House of Representatives refused to consider the bill. The Supreme Court divided 4-4 on his executive order on immigration because it does not have a ninth justice to break ties. The Republican-led Senate has refused to vote on Democrat Obama's choice to replace Justice Antonin Scalia. Scalia died in February. Obama nominated U.S. Appeals Court Judge Merrick Garland in March. Had the Senate confirmed Garland, it is likely the Supreme Court would have overturned lower court rulings blocking Obama's immigration order. American Immigration Lawyers Association President Victor Nieblis said the Supreme Court's decision continues uncertainty for millions of undocumented immigrants. The court, he said, denied parents of United States citizens and students to seek refuge and protection from a dysfunctional immigration system. Roy Beck is head of a group called Numbers USA, which wants more limits on immigration. Beck said the Supreme Court's decision means that immigration policy, including the power to issue work permits, still belongs to the people through their elected officials in Congress. I'm Bruce Alpert.
This is What's Trending Today. A meeting between the Dalai Lama and singer Lady Gaga has angered the Chinese government and Chinese citizens. The exiled Tibetan spiritual leader was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors in the state of Indiana when he met Lady Gaga. The two took part in a discussion on Sunday about human rights, kindness, and compassion. Lady Gaga posted photos and videos on social media of herself with the Dalai Lama. Chinese social media users were not happy. Many quickly expressed their anger over the meeting. Lady Gaga is hugely popular in the country, but the Dalai Lama is seen by the Chinese government as a dangerous separatist. According to the BBC, one Chinese Weibo user wrote that the meeting shows that Lady Gaga has not considered her Chinese fans. Another wrote, "She has given up on the Chinese market." The Chinese government was not happy either. It warned the international community of the Dalai Lama's dangerous motives. China's foreign ministry spokesman, Hong Lei, said in a news briefing Monday that the purpose of the Dalai Lama's visits and activities in other countries is just to promote his proposal for Tibetan independence. The Dalai Lama fled to India in 1959 after a failed uprising against the Chinese government. The Dalai Lama has asked for more autonomy, or power to self-govern, for Tibet. Talks between the Dalai Lama and China's government stopped in 2010. Many musicians have had to cancel concerts in China after meeting with or supporting the Tibetan spiritual leader, including Selena Gomez, Bjork, and Maroon 5. Several media reports this week say the Chinese government plans to ban Lady Gaga's music as a result of the meeting. It would not be the first time. China banned Lady Gaga in 2011. Its cultural ministry said at the time that the singer damaged the nation's cultural security. China lifted its Lady Gaga ban in 2014. And that's What's Trending Today.
Russian-supported rebels seized control of the Ukrainian city of Donetsk 2 years ago. At the time, Irina Nagodya was a first-year student at Donetsk National University.
I remember that I was walking across the city, and I saw all these barricades around the buildings where authorities were. I thought, what's wrong with the people?
Donetsk is a city of 1 million people. It is in eastern Ukraine, about 100 kilometers west of the Russian border. A majority of the people speak Russian. The Donetsk area has close cultural and historical ties to Russia. Marina Nagodnya said life was quiet before the war. Donetsk gained fame as the host city for the 2012 European Football Championship. 2 years later, Donetsk was a war zone. It was at the center of heavy fighting between Ukrainian government forces and pro-Russian separatists. Nastya Melchakovska was also a student in Donetsk.
One day you hear the news that somebody want to attack your city, like your neighbors start support another country, another political ideas, and you feel really strange because yesterday they were your friends and now you're like enemies.
In April of 2014, separatists seized government buildings and declared the Donetsk People's Republic, or DPR. They announced that Donetsk was no longer part of Ukraine. At Donetsk National University, rebel fighters seized cars and two student dormitories. By late summer, it was no longer safe for students to come to class. In September, men with guns raised the flag of the DPR at the university. They demanded a pledge of allegiance from the teachers. Professors who did not support the rebels had to leave. Roman Grinyuk, the university's Ukrainian rector, was forced out.
The so-called DPR's government immediately informed me that I had to gather the academic board members in order to announce the DPR's decision that our university would be under that terrorist group.
Grinyuk and some sympathetic professors left Donetsk, but they did not forget about their students. They would teach them anyway, from an empty factory in Vinnytsia, 800 kilometers west of the city. Donetsk National University became a university in exile. Vinnytsia is a mid-sized city in central Ukraine. It is a three-hour train ride west of the capital, Kyiv. The university administration used space in a Soviet-era jewelry factory in the center of Vinnytsia. They had no computers, desks, or books. They had to leave behind the university's library and student records. With help from foreign partners, local officials, and the Ukrainian government, the university set up simple classrooms. At first, only a few students made the trip west from Donetsk. Nastya Melchakovska was one of them. It was her first time living away from home.
I want to say really thank you to our professors, because I'm still here because of them. When I came to Vinnytsia, there were only two of us in class from my group, and in Donetsk we have 13 people, students. But my professor said that he's going to teach us anyway.
Roman Grinyuk returned to his position as rector.
In 18 months, we not only resumed the teaching and learning process, but we also partially restored the facilities. With the help of our foreign partners, we created modern computer and university labs.
Grinyuk says the biggest problem is finding reasonably priced housing for the growing number of students. Today, about 4,000 students study at the new location. In Donetsk, there were 14,000 students before the war. Back in the city of Donetsk, the original university campus continues to operate under the control of the separatists. Both campuses claim to be the only true Donetsk National University. In a speech in front of the main building, history professor Sergei Baryshnikov criticized the students who moved to Vinnytsia.
The university is where it is supposed to be, in Donetsk. To those who are following the steps of Adolf Hitler, you will end up where you belong, on the waste dump of history.
History is at the heart of the information war in the current conflict. Both sides have long lists of historical grievances. For example, separatist supporters often accuse Western Ukrainians of supporting the Nazis in World War II. Some pro-Ukraine activists say the rebels are trying to bring back the Soviet Union. One side's freedom fighter is the other side's terrorist. The 2015 school year began on time in Donetsk. Students moved back into the dormitories. Artem is a student at the Donetsk campus. He recently spoke to a reporter for Russia 24 television.
I have many relatives in the Russian Federation and in other countries abroad. I have an aunt in Germany and an aunt in Australia, but I personally would like to stay in Donetsk after graduation from the university for about 5 years minimum. The war brought people closer, and so the love for our country now is even stronger.
The university administration in Donetsk has brought back Russian academic standards. Ukrainian language and history classes have been cut back. The school changed its coat of arms from Ukrainian to Russian. Its website now has a Russian domain address. Some students are worried about the value of their university diplomas. Diplomas awarded by the DPR are not accepted in Ukraine or in the European Union. This year's graduates received a second diploma from Southern Federal University in Russia. The students expect these Russian degrees to be accepted internationally. Back in Vinnytsia, Melchakovska and Nagodnya hope their university will move back to Donetsk someday, under Ukrainian control. But Grinyuk does not think that will happen anytime soon.
I personally think that the university will be here for a long time. The current events show that this will be a frozen conflict.
The United Nations says that more than 9,000 people have been killed in the conflict in eastern Ukraine since 2014. The level of violence has decreased in recent months, but the battle for young minds continues. I'm Christopher Jones-Cruz.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.